Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are with me, and joining us for the first part of tonight's episode is driver of the number 39 Honda for Delcoin Racing, Santino Ferrucci. Santino, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We are great. Thank you for joining us here for a little bit. I know you've probably got a busy schedule, so we'll jump right in. For those listening, part one will be the interview with Santino here, and part two will be another interview coming up shortly. So I'll jump right into it, and I'll turn it over to Matt and let Matt start off the questions tonight.
Well, you know, I'm just going to get straight to it because I know from your point of view, the result at Portland has to be super frustrating. So to kind of bow out with a mechanical issue, for the common fan who's just looking at it from a black and white point of view, you finishing towards the bottom of the order. Now, how frustrating is that to be running in the top 10 to have something kind of take you out of the race, out of your control?
Yeah, I mean, we worked really hard with the team over the past month, really focusing on these last two races, and to have something as simple as a fuel sensor wire fail, which is completely out of everyone's control, it's a little upsetting for the team. But I mean, we ran in the top 10 all weekend long, and we showed we had good pace. Obviously, a couple issues in qualifying with traffic, but that was the same for everybody, and We showed what we can do and showed what we're capable of, and we get to look forward to Sonoma.
And then a quick follow-up. Did you, so that whole skirmish that happened in turn two on lap one, did you have any vantage point of that? Did you see Marco flying through the air?
I got to see a little bit more of the aftermath, because what happened, I went into turn one, and Simon Pagino was really late on the brakes and locked up, and I couldn't turn in, so I was forced off with Sato, and we couldn't actually, I mean, I don't know if he could see anything, but I mean, the white barriers in front of us blocked a lot of the vision. And by the time we had come around into two, it was just a big pile of dust.
So you just come around the corner, it's like, oh, hey, look, a car's upside down. So
the second we started to go around, all I saw was dust when I first started to get back on the track. And I was kind of like, all right, this is not good.
All right, cool. So yeah, we'll.
I didn't see Marco flipped over until the next lap.
Oh boy.
So.
All right. Yeah. We'll turn it over to Jess. And so, just so you know, Jess's questions are much funner to answer than Mike's and I's boring racing questions.
All right.
Yeah, I try to not ask any racing questions. I try to ask get to know you questions. So my first question, and this has become infamous for everybody who's been on the show with us, I'm going to give you a 400-pound block of Gouda cheese. What are you going to do with 400 pounds of cheese?
400 pounds of cheese? Well, I can't eat it because I'm like intolerant. I'd probably give it to my girlfriend, who absolutely loves cheese.
I think that's the sweetest answer we've gotten.
Are you going to like carve it into a heart first and then give it to her? Or?
I could try. I mean, my artistic abilities are subpar at best.
Gotcha.
Yep, I know that feeling. All right, so yes, I will be asking a racing question, but I'm going to switch it up a little bit and have some fun with this one. I found this one online, but I'm going to change up the people. You have three people. One of them is going to be your tire changer. One of them is going to be your fueler. And one of them is going to be your strategist. And your three people are LeBron James, Rob Gronkowski, and Chef Guy Fieri.
Oh, God. Chef's definitely going to be the fueler. LeBron can change the tires because he's a big dude and he's quick. And I guess that leaves Gronkowski for strategy.
I love it. So he can spike a tire in celebration after something good happens.
I know, right? Jeez.
Now, being from Connecticut, you must be a Patriots fan.
Giants.
Giants fan.
I apologize.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I won't even. As an Eagles fan, I won't make fun of you either way at the beginning of this one.
Yeah, I'm a Bears fan, and Jay Cutler's last ever game was against the Giants, and of course it ended with an interception. So that's yeah. So this obviously wasn't your first rodeo with IndyCar. You were back in the paddock in Detroit for both races there. How was the, so this wasn't your first rodeo obviously, but how was like the vibe this weekend at Portland, just around the paddock, the garages, you know, interacting with fans and autograph sessions and wherever? How was the vibe? Was it mostly positive?
It was all positive. I mean, Detroit was unique for being Detroit. I mean, not a lot of people actually knew who I was, and you know, and I was filling in for Pietro, who was still recovering at the time. So I was driving the PaySafe car, but to come back here in Portland to be in the Clydell Manufacturing purple car, you know, I think a lot more people recognized me, and you know, I was I want to say among a fan favorite because the car was purple. So it was a little different, to say the least. No, it was hard. But no, Portland was amazing. I've never been around that many fans before on a daily weekend basis. I mean, even back when I was doing the F2 stuff, I mean, there's nobody in those paddocks versus this paddock. I mean, you know, you get to sit outside and chat and talk with fans and answer questions that, you know, they wouldn't normally have or be able to find. So it was really cool.
That's cool. And while we're on the subject of the purple, I know there is some sentimental value to that. And so I think everybody here at Pit Lane Parlay and fans everywhere wishing you and your family the best with your uncle. Obviously that's really sad news. So we wish you guys the best.
I appreciate that.
And we'll turn it back over to Jess here.
Okay. So on a lighter note, of course, I gotta liven things up again. You are going to host a dinner party, and at your dinner party, you can have three people, any three people you want, living, dead, it doesn't matter. Who would you pick and why?
A dinner party with three people. Oh man, you're killing me here. who would I pick?
Yep.
It can't be Gronk, LeBron, and Guy Fieri.
Oh man. Who do I admire the most in the sport? I want to say Michael Schumacher. Definitely got to be on that list. Tom Brady. Ooh. And, oh man, we need a chef. oof, that's a tricky one. Gordon Ramsay?
I was just about to say, Gordon Ramsay versus Tom Brady would probably be gold-rated television.
It really would be. They would be screaming at each other the whole time.
it could be fun.
All right, I like it.
All right, I guess it's back to me now. Switching gears back to racing, you know, you raced at Portland and we're doing very well, I think up to fifth or sixth at one point. Yeah. How do you go into a track that's, you know, a little bit different in Sonoma? You know, what are you looking for in the car when you get in the car on test day, which I think we talked about is next Thursday? Is there, you know, just a general test where you're just going to see what works, or is there something specific you're looking for right now in terms of how the car is going to function going into the weekend?
Well, I mean, I rely a lot on Seb to give me a direction of what we're looking for. You know, he had the base setup done on the car for Portland, and I knew more or less I like an oversteery car, and Seb likes something that's a little bit more stable, and that's just due to our driving style. So I knew what I was looking for in Portland, and we had a good baseline already from Mid-Ohio. And, you know, after working with Seb over the past couple of weeks, I understand that Sonoma is a very different track. So to be honest, I'm more just looking at developing my lines and how I'm going to adjust to driving the car there, because it's a very loose track. You know, it's a very slippery one.
And for those who might be wondering, how would you compare your, you know, your preferences in the car versus a Sebastian Bourdais?
Sebastian, from what I understand, likes a car that's super solid and provides a lot of confidence in the entry of the turns. And he also looks for very good traction. Because my background is more out of recent years in karting. I look for a car that you can more or less turn off the traction control and slide it around everywhere. That's super playful. And, you know, both cars at the end of the day, I think are both super competitive. And from a learning point of view, it's a lot easier to drive Seb's car, you know, starting out, because you can get to apexes better and understand how the car is working better. But I think as you progress as a driver, you tend to steer towards your own kind of car balance. So
cool. Yeah, great answer. Great, some good insight there for everybody listening. And I will turn it over to Matt or Jess. I forget who's next.
That'd be me. So obviously there's huge news today with Fernando Alonso testing at Barber in a private test with Andretti Autosport. So it's kind of a two-part question. First of all, do you just have any general thoughts about Alonso to IndyCar? And if do you want to see that happen?
Of course. I mean, Alonso coming to the sport is huge because he's just a huge name in global racing. And to see him leaving the F1 circuit to come to IndyCar, you know, it's nice. And I think it'll provide a lot of challenge and a lot of different aspects from the F1 world into the IndyCar world that you wouldn't normally see. And, you know, also looking at, there's a lot of European-based drivers that have come over from the F1 world, including Rossi in most recent years. And Wickens is out of DTM, which is basically a Formula One car with a body. So I think it's good that he's coming.
And then to part two of that would be, there are some pretty well-known drivers in F1 who may be on the outs here soon, including a guy like Esteban Ocon. And then obviously with your experience in F2, is there any drivers currently in either F1, F2, F3 that ring a bell for you that you would like to come to IndyCar and give it a try?
Yeah, I mean, Esteban Ocon's probably one of the most talented drivers I've, you know, ever had the opportunity to race against or to see in the sport. And, you know, I really hope that he gets a shot to stay in F1 to become a champion. But I definitely wouldn't mind to see him in IndyCar. And, you know, I think a couple other drivers of his caliber would enjoy coming to IndyCar more so, because you can be more yourself. And, you know, in the racing, in my opinion, is more fun. And, you know, every team has a shot to win every time you show up. So, because the cars are all mono-produced by one manufacturer. I mean, obviously you have your different engine manufacturers, but they're really close and competitive. So it's more of a level playing field.
Sweet. Well, we'll pass that over to Jess.
Okay, so this one, I haven't asked anybody in a while, but we here on Pit Lane Parlay are animal fans. We like animals. We all have animals. I don't know if you just heard my cat meowing in the background, because he was. but we want to know what your spirit animal is, and if you want to explain why a little bit, that's great.
Spirit animal. Oh, man. That's a tough one. I would like to say a Great Dane, mainly because I grew up with one, you know, in my childhood years, and they're literally, I used to be able to ride them like a horse. And he was about the only, you know, one of the dogs that I was, his name was Bogey. And he basically understood the English language, and, you know. So I thought that was always really cool. And, you know, he was a big, aggressive, you know, but really nice-hearted kind of dog. And, you know, that's kind of who I think I would be, I guess, if I was a spirit animal.
Nice.
So, I love it.
Except he was probably taller than me if he stood up. So I'm still short.
Yeah, I have a neighbor's dog who's probably about a foot and a half taller than me. And it's a little terrifying when I'm walking near her house. My dog is all of 16 pounds, so he's not too terrifying, despite the fact he thinks he is. So moving on here, back to racing. You know, you have one race left this year. You know, how does a driver stay, you know, focused in the off season in terms of prepping for 2019? In addition to, you know, not just the business side where you're talking to sponsors nonstop and stuff like that, but from a racing perspective, how do you stay focused and prepared for a season, especially when you may or may not know what your plans for next year are?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is to stay training mentally and physically. And I go over to Europe still to do that. I mean, I really like working in a specific gym there, and I really like the trainers, and they, you know, it's a lot of cardio based and a lot of mental, you know, your mind has to be very strong to be in a 2-hour race as well. I mean, it's not, you know, it's 3 to 4 stints, and with driving like at Portland, 105 laps on the limit, every single corner, every single lap without making a single mistake. And to not race for a good 3-4 months, you know, the only way to really do that is through physical training and some karting. And just to try and stay driving and kind of whatever, wherever.
Sure. Great. And from a mental standpoint, I know, you know, you're not the only guy who's mentioned, you know, some sort of, you know, mental coaching at some point. You know, mm-hmm. what goes into that from a driver's perspective, and how important is it to, you know, work with a mental coach of sorts?
Yeah. I mean, when you're in a mental gym, I mean, you're doing things that are very mind related. So reaction time, things as simple as like ping pong, where you have the machines that shoot multiple balls at you. And with you would combine them with the reaction time. So you're trying to multitask and work your mind to focus on multiple things at once. And then on top of that, trying to understand to work with a mental coach to control your breathing, to control your heart rate. And that's kind of how you move forward and move on and to advance yourself.
I love it. I find that side, you know, especially in all pro sports, more and more athletes working with mental coaches, which I think is really you know, neat and obviously very important. With that, I will turn it back over to Matt.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously you've had a crazy last couple of months, and for me, it was really refreshing to hear what you had to say on Marshall Pruitt's podcast, I think last week. Mm-hmm. And it was really just nice to hear your side of the story. Overall, just, you know, either social media, and I know we've already touched on, you know, just kind of the vibe you got at Portland last week. And how's the reception been since that Pruitt podcast came out?
Yeah, I mean, I can't thank Marshall enough for, you know, taking the time to do that with me. And I think the perception has, I think it's opened people up to who I more so am, because on social media, I don't have a lot of, you know, me and my personal life. It's all just all race cars and racing, you know, and people don't really know the other side of me outside of a racetrack. And I think, you know, since people can now see that side a little bit better and have a better understanding, I think it's easier to relate to at some sort of level. And, you know, there was, you know, to have people actually look at giving me a second chance in IndyCar and to actually show them that, hey, look, we can do really well was a nice thing. So, and Portland obviously was, people were very nice and very welcoming, and it was refreshing. So
yeah, that's excellent to hear. So, so yeah, you can take a breath. We just got the 2 serious questions out of the way. So now time for another, another fun one.
All right.
Yay. Okay. So I want to know what the worst movie you have ever seen is.
The worst movie?
Yeah. Not the best movie. Everybody asked that question. I want to know what the worst one you have ever seen, the movie you hated the most.
That's a tricky one. I don't necessarily, because I've seen so many movies, I don't necessarily hate anyone in particular. I want to say I more dislike, I actually really kind of dislike the new Avengers movie.
Yes.
I'm afraid to like give any spoilers, but I was so happy about it. And at the end, I was so kind of like, oh man, you know, I was so disappointed. Well, not necessarily disappointed, but I was like kind of upset. That was one of the only movies I've been over, like kind of like, oh, crap. You know, I was really hoping for something better, but you know, it was a fantastic movie in all respect and absolutely amazing. Just, I was, you know, along with a lot of other people, really hurt at the end of it, being a huge Marvel fan.
All right, so the ending just wasn't what you wished for.
No, unfortunately not. So
everybody lived, right? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. But, I mean, kudos to Marvel for going out and doing something like completely unorthodox.
True.
So not too many companies do that nowadays.
I have a new addition to the worst movie question, Jess. We only made it through about 10 minutes of it and I had to turn it off. The horror movie Mother is, I think Jennifer Lawrence is in it. We made it through about 10. I love horror movies and the terrible ones on Netflix that have like 0.1 stars. I'll sit through and watch the entire movie when I'm bored. And this movie was so awful. I didn't even get to the scary part of the movie before I turned it off.
I will not watch that for Halloween then.
Yeah, it's not worth the rental. I hope I didn't spend money on it, but I don't even remember if it was on demand or Netflix or whatever it was.
I was going to say, I'm about to go add that to my queue. So
it's just like, I forget who it was told us to watch that movie with Tom Hanks I think it was David Byrd. And I know, Matt, you were on that episode. It was when Jess was moving. And it got, you know, like 1 star out of 1,000 ratings on IMDb. And I did watch the entire movie and it is truly terrible. Go back and listen to the David Byrd episode, everybody. There's a movie that is made fun of. I forget what the title is now that we're talking about it, but it really is terrible.
No, Santino's onto something because my least favorite was Spider-Man 3 and probably will always be Spider-Man 3. So,
really?
Yeah, it's terrible. I hated it.
I can't remember the Spider-Man 3
movie. It's the one with the... Was it Venom? Is that the one? Because one and two were actually pretty good with Tobey Maguire, but then three was just pitiful. So anyways.
I guess when they're that bad, you kind of forget over time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So we'll get this back to Mike here. Get back on topic.
All right, so one race left in the year. You know, Scott Dixon and Alex Rossi are essentially the only two that can win the championship. I know crazier things have happened and, you know, technically Newgarden and Will Power can still win. If you're going to put some money in Vegas on one guy to win the championship with this one race to go, are you going with the young guy or are you going with the wily veteran in Scott Dixon?
I am going to have to choose Dixon. I really like Rossi as a driver and as a person. I don't really know him too well, but I mean, I think Dixon, especially after Portland, how he came back from nowhere to finish in, I believe, top five-ish?
Yep.
Yeah?
I think he finished in fifth, yeah.
Fifth, yeah. It was pretty impressive. So, and, you know, I think that he's just a guy that has no mistakes. So, and I don't expect him to make any coming into Sonoma.
I think that's definitely a fair assumption. I mean, the fact that he made it out of there with essentially... You know, he just lost some paint on the front of his nose. I still can't believe is humanly possible. So we'll turn it back over to Matt.
Okay, so as you kind of continue to evaluate where you're going to be in 2019, we have seen a history of I guess both. We've seen European drivers who are F3, F2, F1 come over and have no interest in doing the ovals, and then we've seen a couple who have done remarkably well at ovals. Robert Wickens this year was phenomenal on ovals. Fernando Alonso, 2017 Indy 500 was excellent. Where are you at with ovals? Is that something you definitely want to explore and give it a shot? Or are you going to kind of maybe take like a Jordan King approach to it and kind of ease into it?
Definitely want to go full out into an oval. So I'm looking forward to possibly having the chance to do that next year. And, you know, from every driver on the grid I've ever talked to, I mean, they say it's some of the best racing they've ever had. So I'm more so excited than anything else.
My man, the more you talk, the more I like you. is there one, I mean, obviously the Indy 500 is, I mean, the bee's knees, but is there one outside of Indy on the IndyCar schedule that you definitely want to like, you know, hey, I want to get to that oval now?
I feel like Iowa would be that one because I feel like Iowa provides some awesome racing. You know, I went to Pocono, I went to Texas, and I went to Gateway, and Aller looked like fantastic tracks and some fantastic speedways. And Iowa was the one that I didn't get a chance to go to yet, so it's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most, other than the 500. So, but I think the 500's on everyone's bucket list.
Santino, you are a bad man. I've been going to Iowa every year since 2007, so you are clearly a man after my heart. My fiance is I might need to tell her to take a hike. we'll get this back over to Jeff.
All right.
Okay, so we're gonna stick with the movie theme, kind of. So you have kind of been given a bad rap, we'll say. You're kind of the IndyCar villain right now. That's, you know, it is what it is. We don't think of you that way because we all adore you, but if you were to pick your favorite villain in a movie, who would it be?
Ooh, favorite villain in a movie. Man, that's a really hard one. I'm thinking towards Marvel villains right now, possibly DC Comics. I might have to go with the Joker.
Sorry.
Yeah, just because he's funny. And to be honest, some of the roles he's played in Batman have been truly spectacular, especially in the more recent one.
Yep.
Yeah, agreed.
So.
Excellent.
All right.
So a slight non-racing question here. I've asked this question to a couple other drivers, I believe, and we're going to make this into a Spotify playlist at some point. You have to listen to one song before a race that gets you pumped up. What song is it? And if we don't know, and the artist.
All right. I'm literally in my Spotify as you speak. it will be Why You Always Hatin' by Still Brazy is, I believe, the album, and it's by YG, Drake, and Kama High, I believe. So, but Why You Always Hatin' is definitely my go-to.
All right, we'll add it to the list.
Okay, so off the top of my head, I don't believe F2 and F3 ever go to COTA. Is that right?
Nope.
Okay, have you ever raced there?
I have. I raced. In 2016, I did Lamborghini Super Trofeo supposed to be a side-by-side with my sponsor, as it was my sponsor's car, but he wasn't feeling good in the weekend, so I ended up going solo, and it was a cool event. I qualified on pole and second, and I ended up winning both of the races, so it was kind of a cool experience.
Okay, so then obviously that was just announced onto the IndyCar schedule for next season, that would be joining Laguna Seca as far as the two quote-unquote new venues for next year, even though Laguna Seca has been there before. But if you had to pick one to race in, or I guess to kind of stray away from that, is there one that you would be more excited to race if you were full-time next year?
Oh, man. You got to give me the hard questions.
Sorry.
All right. I have also been to Laguna. I did some Skip Barber around there, and it is an impressive facility and an impressive old school racetrack. But I think COTA has a little bit more my heart, mainly also because I really love Austin in the city. And COTA is also just super unorthodox kind of racetrack. You know, it's unique, has everything. And I'm more thrilled that it's a new venue as well for an IndyCar. And I think it'll be something of change. And it'll show some incredible racing and some incredible action. So I'm going to have to go more towards, I'm more excited for COTA.
Well,
and I'm happy it's in the start of the year because you don't have to wait very long.
I guess anyway, slice it. I guess I hope we see you on the grid next year. I think all three of us are, like Jess said, I wouldn't say the word adore. Maybe Jess adores you, but I think all three of us are big fans.
Okay, we're fans. How about that?
Okay, how about that? All three of us are huge fans of you. So we hope this all works out. And so we will.
I appreciate that.
We'll get it back to Jess here.
Okay, so the holiday season is coming up faster than any of us would like, I'm sure. So what is your favorite holiday and why?
You mean the all-you-can-eat Thanksgiving holiday?
Yes.
Okay, so we know which one it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it's before the snow starts. So I will say my favorite time of year is more towards winter. But my favorite holiday for the ones coming up is going to be Thanksgiving. So got to go get Noni's meatballs. There's just, and roasted turkey and ham with the fam. So can't miss out on the food.
Food coming. Got it.
Yeah, I agree with all that, especially the winter part. I don't know about out on the West Coast right now, or in Minnesota, but it's been 100 degrees two straight days here just north of Philly, and I melt every time I go outside, and I can't stand it.
65 and sunny.
Yeah, not that. I know I'm not counting Jess because she loves the warm weather in Florida. Yeah. So
90 and beautiful every day.
Yeah. Who's in Minnesota?
That's me.
That's you? St. Yeah. Paul?
Just around there, yeah. Just about 15 miles west of St. Paul.
All right. I went there last year. It's probably one of the cooler cities I've ever had the pleasure of being to as well.
I swear, you were just saying stuff to please me. I swear.
We drove through on a car rally, and the whole city like shut down. It was unbelievable.
That's what we call Minnesota nice, which is an actual thing. So we try to just make everybody's lives easier here in Minnesota.
It was great. So you guys have some really good restaurants.
Hey, next time you're in town, beer's on me. Well, are you 20?
I'm 20.
All right. Well, I don't want to break any laws, but when you turn 21, beer's on me.
Yeah, it's the Indianapolis 500.
There you go.
21.
Then. Talk about, yeah, I think you need milk. I think that's the best birthday present you can get.
Yeah, I can't agree more.
All right. So as we wrap up here, just I guess I have one more question so we can circle one more each here. Yeah. I know you mentioned how your driving style differs from Sebastian Bourdais, but is there one driver that you, tried to emulate, growing up or tried to, currently emulate and in what way?
Schumacher, especially growing up, mainly because of his hands. He's probably one of the few people that if you paid super close attention to that would be able to drive a loose car and make it look perfectly balanced by being incredibly smooth with how he did everything, incredibly smooth with the hands, incredibly smooth footwork, and just one of those people that could just drive anything and make it look like art. So, and that's kind of what I've always wanted to do and strive to do.
I love it. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry, I forgot who was next again.
That's all good. all joking, obviously, I think you've confirmed to me that you're awesome and I'm not going to go as far as call it a bromance, but it might be a bromance. But all joking aside, I really appreciate you coming on with us three and taking the time to talk with us. And so this question isn't more for us three because we're huge fans of you. But, obviously, given what's happened in the last couple of months, there are some fans out there who, are still kind of on knife's edge about you, or some fans who are on the fence about you. So this is kind of an opportunity for you to kind of make a case for yourself. Why should, the average fan who doesn't really know what to make of Santino Ferrucci, why should they root for you?
Oh man. I mean, I work hard and the work ethic that, I've put in over my career is one of the things that I think a lot of people overlook. And I'm just always on the ground. I'm always with fans. I try to invite as many people into the sport as I can to come have a different perspective. And, I don't come from a wealthy background at all. I've worked hard for everything that, I've created over the years. And I just would love for people to see that side of me a little bit more often. If people that are on the fence still do happen to come to a race, I encourage them to come and find me. And to come, meet me and to, ask questions and to get a chance to know me. And I think that's super important, and that's part of the sport that we have over here in America as well. In Europe, not everyone's going to get that opportunity, whereas here in America, it's a lot easier to actually meet drivers and to hang out and to have a better understanding of who they actually are.
You couldn't have said that better. Excellent job. And thanks again. We'll give it to Jess here. One last question.
Thanks.
All right. I want to echo everybody and say thank you so much again for your time. And last question, got to make it a good one. So you're going to host another party, of course. We're going to make you party animal. And this time you're going to have a pinata. So we're going to say that it's for Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, I know, right? So in your pinata, what are you going to put for everybody at your party when it gets broke open?
Tacos.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, boy.
make it a little weird. Tacos, Jolly Ranchers, I want to say like little margarita umbrella hats and that kind of stuff, you know, and stuff to laugh about, like little dice and cards and stuff that you can have fun with. But no, it's mainly got to be filled with Jolly Ranchers tacos all the way.
Okay, well, I want to come just because I want the tacos. So,
what about a taco?
I think
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh no, I just want to thank you guys so much for doing this. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Good. So. Yeah, and you know, thanks for taking the you know some time tonight to join us. You know, the it's been great watching you in Detroit and Portland and best of luck going forward in Sonoma and hopefully we see you out there in 2019 and as we make our rounds at as many of the tracks as possible. For everybody listening, part two will be coming up just after our little sponsor advertisement here in a second. But you know, again, thank you, Santino. We definitely appreciate your time this evening.
Yeah. Thank you guys. It was a pleasure to meet you, Mike, and everyone else. And I hope to catch all of you guys at a race.
Yes, for sure.
Hopefully in the near future next year.
Sounds good to us. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you again to Santino Ferrucci for joining us for the first part of the episode. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Moving on, let's jump right into some news here. Let's start with the Portland recap. What did you guys, you know, think of the IndyCar return to Portland for the first time in 11 years and all of the insanity that went on last weekend?
Well, I thought it was a great race. I mean, how could you not think it was a great race, especially coming back? Obviously that accident there at the beginning was not the best way to start the race, but the rest of the race was great. And I can't wait to go and see it myself next year.
Yeah, it was fun. It was plenty of good drama. Had to be on our toes because guys either kept going off in that final turn or having a mechanical issue. Really scratching my head at Newgarden, Rossi, and two others, King, and I can't remember the fourth driver, who all pitted out of sequence there and really kind of threw away their race. Both, so at least Rossi, Newgarden, and King really had their race under control until they decided to pit after one of those cautions. So kind of a head scratcher, but good for Sato. Made that strategy work. Like I had said on Twitter, pretty much secured his seat for next year, whether that's Ray Hall or someone else. And he's super energetic when he wins, and that's always good to see.
Yeah, it was an awesome race. I think it was one of the most unpredictable races, you know, from lap to lap of the entire season. You know, at one point Rossi had a, you know, 20 or 40 point lead in the standings and ends up 29 points down. How about hats off to Scott Dixon for surviving that crash? Not only you know, his car came away unscathed outside of he lost some paint on the nose of his car. I know he said after the race that he had some minor suspension damage on the right front, that the car didn't drive exactly like he wanted to, but he still finished in fifth place. I mean, that is some ninja level awesomeness by Scott Dixon to escape that and a pit speed penalty, you know, the next time he went down pit lane and still, you know, come away with a fifth place finish. I don't know, you know, if you're Alex Rossi, how do you not just get out of the car and go, what the hell do I need to do to get by this guy? Because even when he gets in an accident, he still escapes. So, you know, hats off to Dixon there. I thought it was a great race. You know, the crowds looked awesome. I know, I think Robin Miller said there was over 40,000 people there on race day, which is a very good crowd. And it seemed like everybody really, you know, that was at the track said the atmosphere was awesome. So, hats off to IndyCar for their appearance there. I guess that's really it. I guess we can transition into the fact that there's one race left. I would say, you know, like I mentioned to, you know, Santino, there's really realistically it's between Dixon and Rossi. I know Power and Newgarden technically are not eliminated, but what do you guys think? Is Rossi going to pull off an upset, or is Scott Dixon going to be Scott Dixon and come away with his fifth championship?
I'm going to still
go ahead, Jess.
I was going to say, I'm going to stick with my pick of Rossi, even though that got me booed there in Gateway. I'm still going to say Rossi.
I'm going to stick with Santino. I'm going to go Dixon. I think you just don't bet against a guy like Scott Dixon. So, been there, done that, seen it all, done it all. He is the man, so I'll go with Dixon.
Yeah, I mean, like I said on stage at Gateway, Scott Dixon is still my pick. I'm glad Jess is sticking to her guns, though, despite Rossi being down by 29 points. But I feel, you know, Dixon's luck, if he can escape the lap one incident like he did in Portland, he's winning the championship. Even if he doesn't win the race at Sonoma, which he doesn't need to do, as long as he has a solid, you know, fifth-ish place finish, I'm sure he'll come away with the championship. Moving on, there was another release by Schmidt-Peterson today about Robert Wickens. It was a lengthy worded release, but I will give everybody a quick recap here. I don't think we mentioned it last week, but he is back in Indianapolis now and about to be put in a rehab facility to start recovering from his lengthy list of injuries and to avoid any uncertainty and any mysterious reporting. Schmidt-Peterson listed all of Wickens' injuries. I'm not going to read the entire list because there's a lot, but fractures in his both of his arms and elbow, ribs, a neck fracture, the spinal cord injury, spinal cord fracture, and there's a couple other on the list there. But the fact he's alive should show our pitfall from last week, Felipe Massa, that the IndyCar is pretty amazingly safe, that he's still still breathing and still talking after he's gone through all of that trauma. So again, we wish him the best and hopefully we see him in the car at St. Pete next year or at least as soon as possible. Matt, do you want to stump the host?
Always. Always looking to stump hosts. It's probably my favorite hobby. So, all right. So obviously, each Indy 500, there's a certain amount of winners that come into the race. But I think one of the things that's fascinating is when, let's say for this year, when Will Power won the Indy 500, you get to go back through the fields of the last couple of years and kind of get to tabulate, how many Indy 500 winners were there in the field in 2011, now that Will Power has won a race? So my question to you guys in the Stump the Host is that, speaking of the 2011 Indy 500, after all is said and done up until this year, so after this year's Indy 500 with Power One, there was now 9 Indy 500 winners in that 2011 Indy 500 field.
Oh boy.
How many can you guys name?
Dario.
Okay, wait, hold on. Can you, so you mean in 2011, there were 9 people that either won before or now after, or just before?
No, before and after. So like Power would be on that list now. So there's one.
Okay, now I got you.
So 2011 was Weldon.
Yep. I think you already said Dario.
I said Dario.
Yep.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
He wasn't racing.
Hunter Ray. Will Power, you mentioned. Are we counting
anybody who is active who won a race?
Cashar Neves, are we counting him as active this year since he raced in the 500?
No, it's active in 2011. Doesn't have to be. They can be retired.
Helios, so what do we have? Dixon.
So we got
Sato. No, was Sato, and I don't think Sato was 2011. Or he was. Okay.
He was. Yeah, he was.
Just gets that one.
He finished the last that race. So.
right. So what are we up to now? 5.
Year 7. You got 2 left.
Okay. 2 left. Oh boy. I was doing so well and now I'm
completely... You're missing a big one.
Ah, of course. I'm trying to think of the teams here on the fly and I'm starting to hit a wall. All right, who are the last two?
Well,
wait a minute. Hold on. You won't shut up and let me think. give me the ones, because he kept going back and forth. So give me the ones that he said.
You got Weldon, Dixon, Franchitti, Power, Castroneves, Hunter Reyes, Sato.
Okay. Oh, man.
I don't think Jess is getting
I
this.
Feel like I should know this, and I don't.
Who's about to make their 300 straight start?
TK.
Oh, TK.
All right, and I think the last one I got you guys. I don't know if you'll get this one, but I'll let Jess like 15 more seconds.
2011.
I feel like this is probably somebody who won, like his only win was the Indy.
Like a while ago.
Yeah.
I feel like it was somebody who won a while ago. Oh, I know it. I know it. Give me a minute.
I can't give you a minute.
Oh, no, the guy.
Describe him.
Really, he's OCD to the extreme, and
that doesn't narrow down.
Totally. No, I mean like a lot of drivers. To the extreme. Give me just a second. I get his name is on the tip of my tongue.
I have an answer queued up, but I'm not going to interrupt.
Buddy Lazier.
No,
Buddy Rice.
Oh, yes. He wasn't in it.
It's Buddy Rice. Because it's like the most
random. Well, I got the first name right.
The most random. Like he joined Panther, I think, in that second car, sponsored by Fuzzy's Vodka, and it's kind of that was his second to last race, I believe. Because I think he did start at Vegas, I believe, or maybe not. I can't remember.
I think you're right.
But yes. So now it's kind of cool because if you look back at it, because obviously after 2011. Kanaan picked up his first win there, Power, Hunter Ray, and Sato. So going into that race, they had 5 winners, but coming out of it now, they're up to 9. And obviously, there's room to add a couple more if someone like Graham Ray Hall wins. So good job to both of you guys.
More me. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, because you wouldn't
stop talking.
Maybe next time we need to let Jess go first.
Listen, you have to be aggressive. You know, no attack, no chance.
There you go.
You just ramble, though. You just ramble until you get one right.
No attack, no chance.
I don't think that counts, though, because if you answer incorrectly, it should be the next person's turn.
I think that's fair. I see your point. Moving on, Fernando Alonso tested the Andretti car this week, the not so secret that became official. I guess, you know, does this mean that, you know, he's one step closer to IndyCar is the question that everybody seems to be asking this week. So Matt, what do you think?
Absolutely. Just based on his body language after the test, his wordage in some of his quotes and his tweets, he seems very stoked about getting the chance to take some right turns in the car. And the general sense that he had of the car after was that he really liked it. It's definitely not a bad thing to have him saying all these positive things about it. So yes, we are one step closer. They just need to get this engine situation figured out. And, you know, Andretti, McLaren, and if applicable, Harding Racing just need to kind of figure some things out to get him in a car next year. But it's definitely something that's looking more and more. There was a period there in the summer where it's like, okay, we haven't heard anything in 3 weeks. Obviously, a lot's changed since then. And it's definitely looking more and more likely as each day passes.
Jess?
I just want to say I kind of called it from the beginning and I said he was coming. I think that this test was an obvious step in the correct direction, and obviously his interview after is another good indicator that this is where he wants to be. So I think as long as everything can come together with a ride, and it should, I definitely see him full-time next year.
I agree with everybody in that video that so posted by IndyCar or Andretti, yes. On the IndyCar, official IndyCar Twitter account or social media account today, the 2-minute recap video where they interview him was awesome. And he looked so happy for a change instead of stomping off of an F1 grid because his car has had another failure of sorts. So I think based on, you know, what you guys said and what we're starting to see and everything, I think it's, I'm not going to say it's 100% chance yet because nothing is, you know, obviously signed on the dotted line. But if we start hearing some engine, you know, some big time engine rumors, I think, you know, at that point we could pretty much consider it official. All right. Obviously the 2019 IndyCar schedule was released this week. I almost forgot what year it was for a quick second.
Sorry, face.
it's been a long day. So, you know, first off, Circuit of the Americas is obviously the other new race joining the schedule next year, in addition to Laguna Seca. What do you guys think about that now that it's official? I know there's been some different thoughts on different layouts going around, and we'll start with that. Jess, I'll put you on the spot first this time, and then I'll jump in.
I'm really excited to see him go there. I mean, obviously, any new track is great. I think that there is the potential there for that to be an extremely good event, just like Portland was. And I'm really looking forward to it. I plan on trying to make it out if I can get the time off work.
Yes.
Yeah. Seems like a lot of drivers are just hyped about it, which is definitely not a bad thing for, I think it was Rossi who said it's like a state-of-the-art facility in America. Why wouldn't you want to go? So yeah, I guess my only worry, again, which I said a couple weeks ago, is that Indy cars are going to look astronomically slower than a Formula One car. Just like a Formula One car would look at, say, like Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the Oval. Just because Indy cars aren't solely built just to run on road courses like an F1 car is. Plus, F1 cars this year will probably be the fastest they ever are, especially with the new aero changes coming next year. So, yeah, I guess that's my only worry. But I think the racing will be really good, which is obviously the most important thing, and not the sheer speeds we see in F1, because that's just not going to happen with this Indy car that we have.
Yeah, I especially liked, I believe he's the track president, Bobby Epstein, on the IndyCar media call, had a really good idea of working with Eddie Gossage and Texas Motor Speedway for, you know, promotion, you know, however they work it, some sort of Texas two-step ticket combo. I mean, the possibilities are endless, or, you know, whatever they get for a, you know, a concert at Circuit of the Americas, you know, some entertainment and whatnot. You know, they're saying all the right things and approaching this in the right way from a, you know, an off track perspective. And I think if we can go based on what we've seen Indy cars on the street and road courses this year, is we are definitely in for a good treat next year. And then my other question is, outside of Indianapolis, what race are you guys most looking forward to either watching or attending?
Let's put you on the spot first.
Oh no, I wasn't ready. I think my answer. So, all right, since you're putting me on the spot first. Well played, by the way. jumped in there before I even had a chance to ask one of you guys. I will go with Circuit of the Americas. I think, you know, from a track perspective, the racing's gonna be really cool. I would love to check out Austin, Texas. I've never been down there, and it's already on my 2019 travel list. So I think all in all, Circuit of the Americas will be the one race outside of Indy that I'm definitely most looking forward to. I think Toronto would be a 1A or a second place, because I absolutely love the city of Toronto, and the race there this year was fantastic. What about you, Matt?
Well answered. Well played. I think I can't say Road America because I won't be there next year, sadly. I mean, and I go to Iowa every year, and I always look forward to that. But strangely enough, I guess if we're just looking at this year, I sadly might have to say Mid-Ohio, just because it was a phenomenal race this year. And if we get a similar show like that next year, what's not to look forward to? So if it can do what it did this year, I think that would be absolutely phenomenal. So I'll say Mid-Ohio.
Jess?
I'm going to have to go with Portland. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, long weekend, it was an excellent race. And I've always wanted to go up there and check it out. So what a better way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair, Portland is definitely one I will also be attending next year. And I'd also love to get to Laguna Seca. I mean, there's really no track that I don't want to be at next year. So moving on, some more silly season talk. I think there's two ones that kind of came out of nowhere this week that were pretty interesting in Sebastian Bourdais and a little bit of Connor Daly talk. Sebastian Bourdais' 2019 option has not been picked up by Dale Coyne yet, so he's not a certainty to return there. I find that wildly fascinating because I know he hasn't had, you know, the strongest second half of the year, kind of the middle of the year. He's kind of tailed off a little bit. Yeah, but he obviously started off the year with a win and was pretty strong for the first couple races. I'll put myself on the spot first on this one. If he's not going to be back with Dale Coyne, where could he go? And that's the answer I'm struggling with. So I will let Matt turn that over because he looks really excited to answer that question.
Well, I heard you say you put someone on the spot. I didn't hear if it was me or Jess. I don't know. If Robin Miller seems convinced that Felix Rosen, and by convinced, I mean he's shouting from the hilltops that Felix Rosenquist is going to that Ganassi car in place of Ed Jones next year. Because that would be the most logical spot is for Bourdais in a second Ganassi car. And I think, pretty sure Ganassi announced sometime a month ago saying he was sticking with two cars. So outside of that, I don't know. I don't feel like Bourdais is going to want to lounge at a smaller team like he did with Bourdais and go somewhere like Scuderia Corsa. I mean, maybe a second seat at Rahal. I mean, it's just really, who knows? I mean, it's not, with the seats available, it's not really an ideal time to move unless you can somehow team up with Fernando Alonso. But the quality of seats available, I mean, it's not like he's vying for a Penske seat or anything like that. So I don't know. If I was him, I'd stay. But if I had to guess, I'd say a second Rahal car.
Yeah, if I were him, I would stay too, but I believe it's a team option, correct? So it's up to Dale Coyne.
Right, but like I don't know why Dale Coyne would replace Sebastian Bourdais with Zachary Clément de Mello. Like that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yes.
Unless it's a financial thing.
I agree, but we'll let Jess chime in here if she has any differing opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say the only reason I can see Coyne not re-signing him would be a financial thing, and somebody would have to probably bring a substantial amount of money. And I mean, I don't know everybody's financial situations, obviously, but I feel like there's nobody probably who would bring enough money to buy him out of his seat. But I don't know. We could see. I mean, stranger things have happened.
Especially this year.
Yeah, right. It's the year of who? So I don't know. I personally would like to see him stay with Coyne. I think that's kind of the little team that could, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think Matt said it best. And if you're a Dale Coyne, why would you not pick up Bourdais' option? Obviously, money being the deciding factor, but you know, maybe a Rahal third car. I don't think he would go to somebody like Harding or Carlin. Although Carlin would be cool if he could team up with whichever driver they decide to keep, or if they go a totally different route and you know, add a young driver. So we shall see. That one really came out of left field to me. I didn't think there was really any uncertainty about Sebastian Bourdais' location next year. I'm sure he'll be back in IndyCar in some form. But with Coyne, I guess we'll find out. Moving on, Connor Daly may have something in the works with Air Force as a sponsor again. There's not too much that came out about that one unless I missed it this week, but to see that pop up after a pretty impressive showing at the Indy 500 for Connor is definitely good to see, and you know, we hope we'll see him more in the car next year as he's doing the Brian Clausen 39 event at Indy Motor Speedway this weekend. I don't know how he did last night, but you know, good for Connor to at least have something that may be a little bit more concrete than he had coming into this year. I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts on that, or we can keep moving on.
Just kind of like what I said when he was in contention for that Harding seat. I just wish if the Air Force does come aboard, they just need to get him at like the third Schmidt car or something better than a fourth coin car with a team that hasn't been in the 500 for 20 years, or a third Harding car that has technology from 1996 on the car, or something along those lines. So if he's going to do it with Air Force, I just hope they do it right and get him into an actual seat that he can contend with.
Very well said. Jess?
My only question is, is it going to be for more than one race? Because I know the armed forces a few years back cut their marketing budget dramatically. And so that's why we don't really see them as much anymore on cars for any series and for more than a race or two. So hopefully it's for more than just one race, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that right now because I've not ever seen anything where the armed forces have a lot more money to work with.
Was it a legal thing? Like, didn't the government get sued or something? Or
the government took their funding away, but I don't know the whole backstory on why.
No, it was John Barnes who sued the government. That's where I'm getting mixed up. God, what a fool. I can't believe it. That was one of the dumbest things I ever seen. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but the guy lost his sponsorship for Panther Racing and decided to sue the government. Like, yeah, that would have ever worked out well for him.
Yeah, that was a very comical lawsuit to follow. I didn't think from day one that he had any chance to win it, and obviously he didn't. And he probably spent all of any remaining money he had on his legal fees, which, you know, the government has a lot of money and John Barnes does not. So I don't understand his thought process there, but maybe we'll save that history lesson for an off season.
Yes. Episode. I'll add it to the list.
Yeah. That'll be a good one. All right. Let's see.
What should I title it as? John Barnes. Is John Barnes a fool?
Is John Barnes insane?
There we go.
speaking of Harding Racing, they will have both Colton Herta and Pato O'Ward at Sonoma next weekend. And I believe Pato tested today. I don't think Herta did. At least I'm not aware that he did. Pretty awesome. I'm especially excited for both of these young guys to get a, you know, chance now that the Indy Lights season is over. I don't think we've seen something like this too often, other than, you know, Clayman DeMello was the one guy last year, but that was not as big as Herta and O'Ward, who are much bigger names than Clayman DeMello was at this point last year. So should be good. I don't know how Pato's test went today. Other than that, a bunch of guys had some trouble in a couple turns and overshot them. So we shall see next weekend. But they are also both in contention for the possible Harding expansion next year into a second car. I know there's plenty of options, Pato. I shouldn't say plenty of options. There are options for Pato because he carries the scholarship, and I'm sure Colton Herta and Steinbrenner Racing will bring plenty of money to the table. But what do you guys think about Pato and Colton? Is there one you'd like to see at Harding and one you'd like to see specifically somewhere else, or general thoughts? I haven't put Jess on the spot first. I think this entire second half of the episode here. So Jess, you are up first.
I would like to see them both be able to move up. Do I think they're both going to be at Harding? Probably not necessarily, unless everything comes together with this whole Andretti deal. And I mean, there's just going to be lots of questions until all of that happens, I think, for everybody involved. But if I had to pick, I guess one of the two, I think I would have to go with Pato. I think he seems more hungry to win. And I think that he would be a better fit for them, possibly with his just wanting to learn more. And I mean, this is just personal opinion. Obviously, I don't know everything about Colton, but I feel like Pato is more passionate about it and more intense in his willingness to try different things, I guess.
Matt, go right ahead.
I think Jess, I'll agree with Jess as far as Pato to Harding, but for two completely different reasons. The first is that Pato does have a cool $1 million in his pocket that Harding would gladly accept. And the second part is that Brian Barnhart seems to have a passionate love affair with Pato O'Ward as a driver. He's raved about him several times and said that he is a guy that is very talented and someone they want on their team very badly. And I haven't, not necessarily haven't heard the same things about Colton from Barnhart. He said, a lot of nice things about him, but it just seems like from what we see as far as quotes go, that Brian Barnhart really, really wants Pat O'Ward on his team. And then as far as Herta goes, definitely going to at least have a part-time gig next year. It's tough to see. I mean, this Bourdais thing kind of messes some plans up, I guess, if he does end up going away from Coin.
That'd be a good fit then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, him and Herta at Coin wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Otherwise, I was under the assumption that it would be that second Ray Hall car or third Ray Hall car if they decide to expand even further. So, last couple seasons, silly season has been kind of wrapped up by, you know, late September, early October. I don't think we're going to have an early curtain call for the silly season this year.
I think, you know, just like everything's, you know, news wise has been happening since, I don't know, pretty much we started the show back in the end of November last year. I think we're in for an off season full of news and surprises, especially with potential engine manufacturer news that we'll get to in a minute here, and all this, you know, Bourdais news and Connor Daly and McLaren and Harding and Andretti, and I mean the list goes on and on of stuff that is not yet resolved. So it should keep us plenty busy in the off season, which makes me very happy. I guess speaking of McLaren, we'll segue right into that one here. Stoffel Vandoorne out of McLaren next year in the F1 family, but Zach Brown wants to keep him in the family. So if McLaren comes to IndyCar, he could potentially fill that second McLaren IndyCar seat. Now, I have to be honest, I don't know a ton about Stoffel Vandoorne other than that he has not particularly had a very good year in the races I've paid attention to. I don't know about you, Matt. I know you pay attention to them here and there.
It's good. It's good stuff to nap to. But as far as Vandoorne, very talented, uprising through the ranks. And then there is a Amazon documentary about McLaren's 2017 offseason and developing the car for the first race of the year.
Right.
And he seems like a really stand-up dude, just super nice, super laid back, very friendly, very easy to talk to. Kind of got that IndyCar personality to him that him as a person can't really thrive in the world of Formula One. Not necessarily him as a driver can't thrive, but him as a person is just, he doesn't fit that paddock mold that we see with the some of the F1 personalities over there. So I think he'd be a welcome addition to Formula One. If anything, I'd like to see him just maybe give two or three races a try next year.
Yeah. Even if, hypothetically speaking, McLaren becomes an IndyCar team next year in some capacity, if they ran a second car at a few races, maybe the 500 and, you know, some of the bigger, you know, Long Beach, et cetera, would be a cool place to test out somebody like Vandoorne in race mode. Jess, any thoughts?
You did throw me a little bit with that second Andretti car there when you said that. I was like, wait a minute, what? I think a test, maybe an Indy car, maybe a race. Do I see him coming over full time next season? Not really. I don't know that much, honestly, about his F1 career. I haven't really followed in a couple of years because it's frankly just too boring. if he had a pretty good racing background before that, I mean, the more the merrier for sure. I just feel like maybe not next year.
I think that's fair. I think that might be down the line if and when McLaren is, you know, their own full-time team. Lastly, before we wrap things up this week, Bobby Rahal did an interview with a racing engineering website and mentioned that he thinks Alfa Romeo or Kia will be the third engine manufacturer whenever they get started in IndyCar. I thought the Kia one was interesting. I know Alfa Romeo has been talked about a little bit here and there throughout the season. And I know Kia started to step up their performance racing department a little bit. So that to hear them even mentioned by somebody like Bobby Rahal means there's probably, you know, a little bit of merit to it, at least that, you know, maybe they've been included in the discussions. I don't really have a preference either way, but I'm glad to hear somebody important like Bobby Rahal talking about who he thinks the third engine manufacturer is going to be. And to me that seems that there's at least been, you know, some concrete discussions, more than obviously the news has been told so far. So do you guys have any preference on which one, if you picked, or what do you think about Rahal coming out and doing this interview and mentioning two manufacturers like that? Go ahead, Matt.
That's good. It's good news. If I had to pick one, I'd say I think the one that's more likely to happen will be Alpha. And I know they were in IndyCar. I don't know how long they were in IndyCar. They were originally with Roberto Guerrero in 1990 or 89, and then they went over to Patrick Racing with Danny Sullivan. And I don't know exactly when they left, but they do have a history in IndyCar. I don't know if Key is in racing. I know they're stepping up their one performance division or whatever you said, but I don't know if they have like a rich history in racing. I mean, they didn't really have a rich history in producing good cars up until about 10 years ago. So we'll see, but it's, I don't know, it's not bad news to get a third engine manufacturer. It's just, hopefully it's not another Lotus.
Very well said. Jess?
Yeah, hopefully we don't ever see another Lotus. But yeah, I definitely want to see Alpha. I own a Fiat, so there's that. And I know that they do, obviously Fiat has a big racing history and Alpha is owned by Fiat. So it would be, you know, just continuing on. And I think it would be the better fit, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like, just from a quick Google search, Kia is doing some lower level sports car racing, but doesn't look like anything more than decals on the side of a souped up Kia. So we shall see on that one. I think I'm with you guys. I would rather see Alpha, purely because they've, you know, been around racing, and you know, Kia, like Matt said, hasn't really been all that relevant in passenger cars until the last couple of years. So before we wrap things up, hopefully everybody tunes in for the next couple days to the Brian Clausen 39 event at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They have a dirt track within the track. The racing so far has been fantastic. Connor Daly is racing. I can't remember who else that we would know is racing. One of you guys possibly remember more than me. I know Landon Castle is racing from the NASCAR world.
This is a Jess question, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, Jess, do you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But there was like 400 entries for this race. It's being called the Outdoor Chili Bowl already, and it's not over the next couple days. I hate to tell you that tonight is it. They are actually doing hot laps right now. I'm watching them on my computer as we speak, and they're getting ready to run this thing. So if you want to watch, you better tune in like now.
I think some of it is being rebroadcast on NBC Sports tomorrow.
It's going to be a limited rebroadcast, okay. I'm sure, just of like the 39 lap feature. And it's called the BC 39 from Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I'm hopeful that they bring it back again, because I really wanted to go and I was really upset I didn't get to.
Yeah, if it wasn't on a, you know, Wednesday and a Thursday, I probably would have tried to get out there, but a little difficult to do during the week. Moving on, thank you again to Santino Ferrucci for joining us for the first part. Really, really great interviewer, I think, for a young kid, very well spoken. Probably one of the better spoken younger drivers I've talked to. I think Pato would also be pretty high on that list, but thank you to Santino and the Coin PR team for helping us set that up. And then as you guys probably saw on our social media, we started our Patreon page, giving away a bunch of stuff, including the chance to win some pit and paddock passes and join us as a guest host on part of an episode in the off season. But thank you to my main man, George Butts and Colin Taylor, as our first Patreon subscribers this week. They'll be getting some merchandise, and the merch will change every couple months probably. And, you know, so everybody who, you know, subscribed and George and Colin Taylor, are getting some merchandise and, you know, bonus mini episodes and some other cool things that we'll be doing throughout, the off season to keep everybody entertained. And unless we have anything else, I think we can give Jess the okay to sign it off. And Matt says we're good to go. So Jess, let's sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcastly Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.